Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, this morning, I'd like to say a little more about a passage. Well, we just finished the series on the Katagiri Roshi's book. Actually, it is the third part of the series, which I've been doing over the last three summers. And now we completed the book. In the last section of the book, Katagiri Roshi mentioned a very intriguing quote by Dogen, which I didn't really have time to elaborate on very much, at least in the class, and so I'd like to say more about it here. The quote is, Dogen said, "People ask, what is Buddha? An icicle forming in fire," he said. Interesting quote. What is Buddha? An icicle forming in fire. And I thought, at the time I realized I had quite a bit to say about this and I couldn't really pack it into the class, so I thought I'd give a little talk on it now. What is Buddha? An icicle forming in fire. Katagiri Roshi went on to say that, he said, this seems impossible to us. But he said, nevertheless, this is the reality that we live in. It seems impossible, but it's the reality of our lives. So what is this talking about exactly? And I want to caution you into thinking, don't think of this just simply as poetic, beautiful metaphor of Dogen's. It really is speaking very clearly about what the actual experience of this moment is. Though it seems very strange to us at first, but if you also consider the fact that normally, if we're really honest with ourselves, we don't understand reality. Reality is very baffling to us, puzzling. We think we do, and all the little small scales that we're handling our daily lives, we think everything's fine, we're getting along, we understand everything. But actually, when we step back, we don't really understand reality at all. And then when Dogen points directly to it, then we think perhaps that this is kind of strange. This seems impossible. How can we have ice forming in fire? Nevertheless, as Katagiri Roshi pointed out, this is the reality of our life. It is just like this. So I think I'd like to say a little bit about this particular passage. The question, what is Buddha? First of all, to help us understand this passage, this is not a reference to a person who lived 2,500 years ago, Gautama, the Buddha, the awakened one. This is not how this word Buddha is being used at this point. This is actually a reference to reality itself. In other words, the question is, what is reality? What is reality as it is manifested here in our lives? This is called, what is Buddha? But this is what he's actually asking, is what is reality? And Dogen said, an icicle forming in fire. So it's very important, I think, that we understand the question, what is Buddha? You just think of it in terms of, what is reality? An icicle forming in fire. It seems impossible to us. When we look very carefully at our lives, there's many ways in which this this reality seems impossible to us. But the way in which it strikes us as being baffling and odd is very much the way, well, say, like, for example, scientists wondering about Schrodinger's cat. I'm not going to get into physics here, don't worry. But maybe you've heard about this one, where we have this live dead cat, it seems. If we can believe quantum mechanics, then we must have live dead cats. But how can this be? How can we have a live dead cat? How can we have icicles forming in fire? Nevertheless, we do. It's exactly the same situation as going on here. But the bafflement that we suffer from is it has nothing to do with reality. Reality isn't confusing, nor is reality confused. But it's that we freeze out our experience in various ways, icicles, when in fact reality isn't frozen. It's fire. So there's many ways in which we do this. You know, like, for example, in the case of a live dead cat, you know, we think that live dead is the baffling part, but actually it's cat. we think we have cats. Of course, if we do have a cat, then it's either alive or dead, of course. But we don't understand that this cat is a kind of a frozen thing. There's really no such thing that this word cat is actually referring to, because everything's fire. It's motion, it's movement, and change. We don't see it that way, and so we're confused. And this confusion extends into all different aspects of our lives, our daily lives. Well, like, for example, it isn't just the physical reality that's confusing. Even our mental reality is very confusing if we begin to look at it. One of the things that we think isn't fire, isn't this constant change and flux, and we start to look at the self, what is it that's enduring here? Well, very often the thing that people will point to is memory. Memory is something that endures. But I would question that memory is something that endures. It was about this time last year, my wife Jean and I were about to leave on a trip, and we were going to head up, we were heading up north, and we were going to go up through Itasca State Park, where the headwaters of the Mississippi arm. And I remember I was talking with Paul before we left, and I was talking about how I had visited there with my family when I was a boy, 8 or 9 years old. And I can remember jumping over the Mississippi River. I have a very clear visual, even now, I still do, after having visited last year. But I had a very clear visual memory. I can see the grassy banks on either side, grass, kind of tufted grass, just hanging over this beautiful, clear river flowing out of the lake there, and I remember jumping from one shore to the other. Paul, though, before we left, he says, you can't jump over the Mississippi River, not even there at the beginning, where it flows out of Lake Itasca. And I said, well, yeah, I did. I did. Well, later on, a day later or so, we were up there, and by golly, Paul was right. I mean, there's no way I could have, even as a, well, in the peak of my manhood, I wouldn't have been able to jump over that river. But as a little boy, I certainly could not have jumped from one shore to the other. That river was much wider than I remembered, and yet I had this very clear picture in my mind of this river and how I had jumped across. Other details were there. There was a tree that was down across the river, and part of it was cut away so that it formed kind of a flat a surface that you could walk across the river. It was a little bridge, kind of a tree bridge. Well, that was still there, or at least something very much like it was still there. So here we have memories. I have a memory of this tree being put across the river where you could walk across on a bridge, a little footbridge. That was still there. But I think I saw it in a different configuration or something in my mind. But the point I'm making, though, is that we can have very clear, distinct memories of things, and we think that these things don't change, and yet they get stitched together with other things. I mentioned too later on, we visited my mother on that trip. This is after we'd been to Itasca last summer. She herself also remembered it in the same way, that you could almost step across the river at that point. But clearly this is wrong. Even a shared memory, confirmation, yes, it was like that. Well, you go up there and you take a look, and it's not like that. And I realize now from looking at it, it couldn't have been that way, the way I remembered it. So I would caution you in thinking that your memories are solid, enduring. There are times when they get stitched together with other ideas, other thoughts, but it is all very much changed. Nothing is holding still there. That aspect of our mental life is not the solid rock that we might think it is. People can have false memories, things that you dreamed get later on sewn into memories that you might have had. The real tree, the false width of the river, whatever. So these memories then become like icicles, something formed that we think is solid, has form, it is enduring, and it's persisting from moment to moment, and we carry them with us for years, and thinking that such and such is true, and yet maybe not. I remember just recently I shouldn't steal this from Norm, but he told me once of how he, as a boy, he saw iguanas. He's from Berkeley, California and around San Francisco Bay there, he saw iguanas one time. He went down by the water, and there were some iguanas crawling over. And he said later on, he mentioned this to someone some years later, and they said, "Well, there's no iguanas there in San Francisco Bay. You're not going to see iguanas, you know." But he had this clear memory, you know. And I was just talking with him last night, and I mentioned this about Itasca, something. I was just recalling something there, and he reminded me that I told him last year that I had jumped over the Mississippi River. And I explained to him that I realized that I hadn't. And then he recalled, "Well, you know that story I told you about the iguanas?" He said, "I probably better stop telling people that I saw iguanas in San Francisco Bay." But I'm kind of going on about this, but the fact is I would be very reluctant to think that, you know, the memories, the way we've constructed the world and we hold it in our minds of the past and how everything has unfolded in the past, it is not all that solid. It appears that way to us. It looks like solid ice, something frozen there, something that is enduring. And yet, with everything changing, there's nothing about this memory that isn't changing too. And there's no way to really check out and remember exactly what is true about it and what isn't. It is all somewhat provisional. Same thing too with our emotional life. Any other aspect of your mind you want to look at, we can see that this is also changing. And the way that we would understand people, the way we react to people, we tend to peg people here and there. You know, they're good or they're bad, or they did this to me 20 years ago, and we still resent them, thinking they're a bad person, and yet everything about that person has changed, but we don't give that a chance. And we also carry this on from generation to generation. I was just thinking of all the unrest in the Balkans, where for hundreds of years, you know, people have been fighting and arguing about what? About things that happened so many centuries ago, and yet no one alive today remembers that. It's all been carried on by memory and thinking that this is true and this is solid and this is real, and yet we act out of this. And this spills over into the world at large. I mean, here, the unrest that we found there back in at the beginning of World War I, this is where that began. World War I erupted out of that part of the world, and that kind of unrest, and spilled over through Europe and around the globe. We had World War II, which is just an extension of that. And this kind of difficulty is still going on today. Most of the pain and struggle that we found in the 20th century was all a part of this, but it's mostly a part of what? It's a part of our thinking and believing that the constructs of our mind, the ideas, thoughts, beliefs, the memories, are all real and substantial. This is ice forming in fire. But we believe in the ice. We really think it is there. We don't realize that it is all fire. So in so many different ways. But it isn't just, of course, our mental life that seems to give us these different kinds of frozen forms. We also see it in the physical world. I mentioned the cat earlier. But in a few weeks, I hope I'm going to be up in the Boundary Waters, and you dip your paddle, you know, into the water, and you see that beautiful whirlpool swirling in the water, and we call it that whirlpool. Look at that beautiful whirlpool. But we don't appreciate the fact that what we're calling that whirlpool is not a particular thing. It is not an enduring thing. We think of it in that way. We see something formed there, which is actually fire, but we see it as ice formed in fire. That whirlpool is shifting in the lake or in the river and not holding its form. It's also becoming shallower, perhaps, and even the very walls of this whirlpool, the molecules of water that are constructing the walls of this whirlpool, are in continuous change. In no two instances do we find the same configuration of water molecules making the surface of that whirlpool. And yet we don't see this, we don't appreciate this as the reality of what is being experienced here. We see the enduring thing, we pick up on that, we pick up on this ice forming in fire. Now, It isn't wrong. Dogen isn't saying that the fact that we have this ice forming in fire is wrong or bad, that we really just have fire. We do see the forms. We do see the constructs that are there. But we don't realize that it is fire, and that actually we can't have ice in fire. Nevertheless, we see them. So in other words, we don't get rid of the constructed reality, but we have to understand its nature and not be taken in by it, by the beliefs and the ideas and the different structures that we find and the memories that we hold. We don't need to be, you know, taken in by all of this. So this is a very important point, and this is what Dogen is speaking to, very nicely packed into this tiny little phrase. What is Buddha? What is reality? Ice forming in fire. And this fire, this is mind. Mind is what? It is movement. It is change. It is continuous change. We look at the, whatever you want to take here, the stone. Stone is just like the whirlpool, right? It's just at every instant, it's actually presenting us with a different surface. But we don't recognize that because we don't see the small changes, the molecular changes that are taking place. And that over a long enough period of time, we would see this stone change. Even if nobody touched it, it would change. I say it would change. But of course, because there is just the change that is occurring, there's no it there that is actually doing the changing. No whirlpool, no particular thing that is the whirlpool or the cat. But to see the reality, what the awakened see when they see this reality, that is what they see. They see this continuous change and are not taken in a way that we commonly are by the forms that are appearing within our experience. So this is a very important point, that it is all mind, this movement, this change, this flow. This is mind itself. This is reality itself. It is mind. It has physical aspects, material aspects that seem to have some kind of solidity to them. But behind it all, it is really mind. And mind is nothing but the change and the movement. It is fire. It is a continuous activity and change, always in each moment showing us a different configuration. And yet the forms, the mind objects that form within mind, within this experience, are all like frozen things. They're like icicles, but they're like icicles forming in fire. If we don't realize this, then we are confused. We think the icicle actually is the enduring reality that it appears to be. And we don't realize that it is something that is just formed. But formed how? It is just formed in the mind as a memory, as a belief, as a physical object, the momentary whirlpool, or the momentary flower, or even the momentary stone. That doesn't appear so momentary to us, but nevertheless it is. We can know this, we can realize this, we can see this, not just as an idea, as a concept. It isn't a matter of, yeah, you know, I know behind the facade of the solidity of the world and the solidity of thoughts and beliefs and opinions and memories is this thoroughgoing, changing flux. No, it is a matter of actually seeing that directly. This can be done. It isn't held as an idea, interpreting the world in this way. It is to know. When you look at the stone, you look at the memory, that whatever it is that we see, it is impossible. It is impossible. Nevertheless, here it is. Here it is. So when we approach reality, we're confused by this fire and ice, because this is reality, fire and ice, but we don't see that because we think that's impossible. That's impossible. It must be ice. And if it's ice, then it can't be fire. And so when we put it together in our minds that way, we think that there's a contradiction now. When the enlightened, you know, such as Dogen, they speak in this particular way, what is reality? It is ice forming in fire. We don't get that. We think that that is contradictory. Why? Because we think that the icicle is what is real and substantial and enduring, and we miss the fire altogether. That even the icicle is fire. maybe you have some questions. Yes.
I remember seeing a tourist photo of somebody standing over the Mississippi River at a source with 1 foot on each.
Oh, really? Really? Well, you see, now it's possible that my memory maybe was correct. Maybe since I was 9 years old, they actually widened that mouth. Is that possible? I don't know. Yeah, but you see, the thing is, I don't trust it anymore. I don't know. You do?
Yeah.
It
was just a little stream.
That's what I remember. Just a small stream coming up. Really? Yeah. Well, you see, there you go. You know, and maybe there were iguanas in San Francisco Bay. Yeah. Well, we have a book on reptiles. Gene looked it up this morning, and I mentioned this, now there's no, the range of iguanas do not make it up to San Francisco. They barely get out of Mexico. So, but they do, there are in the Southwest there a little bit. But even if you were to tell me now that, you know, actually, you know, but when you were 9, the Mississippi was that narrow at its source, it still doesn't invalidate that our memories. This is very helpful to know. It makes us a little bit more humble, perhaps, less attached to our views. We also might think that, well, my gosh, if everything that I'm holding back there in terms of, you know, how I put the world together and how I remember it, and, you know, memories through my childhood and my youth and all of this, if we think that this is all just a facade or something that's shaky and pliable and whatever, we might think that there's no foundation for my life here. And that might sound kind of scary, but actually it's true. There isn't any foundation, but there never has been. And nevertheless, here we are. And this is what the awakening, this is that talk, I've mentioned this, I think, just recently, the koan about stepping from the top of a 100-foot pole. It's just like this. Our life is, we're always at the top of this 100-foot pole. We don't realize that, though, until we wake up to reality and we realize we're stepping at the top of a 100-foot pole. And then we think, well, how can that be? Where can I go? How can I step? And, you know, you have to take the next step. But in our irrational kind of thinking, or the way we've constructed it in our mind, is that, well, you take a step off a 100-foot pole, you're going to fall. But we don't fall. The next moment, we're still here. Now, don't take this literally and try it out on a 100-foot pole. I don't mean that. But what is sustaining us? First of all, there's no you to be sustained. But nevertheless, here we are, moment after moment, we have this. It is always thus, and it is always this change, this flux, this flow, this move, this fire. We don't need to worry about the icicles, that they'll continue to form. They'll continue to form and melt, and this always goes on. But once we understand this, we don't need to continuously grasp this. Oh, yes, there was an element in my talk I left out. Kind of the central point, actually. But the main icicle that we're concerned with, of course, is me, is the self. And we hold to this very dearly, wanting to preserve this. But it is still all the same, just an icicle forming in fire. Right from the get-go, there always has been just this change, this flux, this flow, this appearance of the icicle is just that. It is just an appearance. We can't dismiss that appearance. But to think that we have this enduring thing called me is to bind ourselves to a lot of confusion, suffering, because it is a mismatch. It doesn't match reality. It doesn't match our actual experience. And as a result of that, we suffer. We also suffer because we hold this self so dear and we want to maintain it. You know, we want to preserve it. We want to please it. And of course, it's a losing battle, because actually, the world is fire. It's constant change and movement. Nevertheless, the icicle will continue to form. We don't need to worry about that. But in each moment, new icicle forming, thawing, forming, thawing. Always there, no substance, top of a 100-foot pole. Nevertheless, you're sustained. The world sustains. Sustain is actually the wrong word. It's the word we're borrowing because we think that there's something there to be sustained. But the point is, it doesn't change. It is, we always have thus. It is always just as you see it now. But with this continuous reconfiguration of the forms, you know, but the forms really signifying nothing. Okay, well, I wanted to add that element to it. Yeah, David.
Well, that takes care of itself, but in terms of the other, of course, I'm able to say that if you have self, you have other, and if you don't have self, you don't have other. But when Bernie Glassman was here, people were asking him, well, how do you take care of other people when you're afraid that you might not be doing it right, and so forth and so on? And I thought his answer was really good. He said, my hand is bleeding. Is my other hand going to worry about, well, maybe I better finish med school before I take care of this hand that's bleeding?
Yeah.
And get the proper amount of insurance and all that? No, you just want to take care of it. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's an icicle melting, you know, why bother?
Oh, because a bleeding hand is, there's pain there, there's confusion there, there's suffering. We need to take care of these forms, you know. We need to take care of, you know, we this is what I said earlier, that this doesn't mean that we can dismiss these things. It is impossible to dismiss these things because they continue to form. And so we do need to take care of them. But if we think that we have some kind of solidity there, now this is the time where we will dismiss. It is not when we see the icicle as forming and thawing and fire where we would have a dismissive attitude. It is when we think that we have solidity there. Now we could have an attitude of dismissal. So that very attitude of, well, if it's just an icicle forming in fire, that's still holding to the idea that we have some kind of solidity. And if it isn't, by golly, then what's the point? You see? Yeah. Well, it's because we think that we have something here. It's either we have something here or we don't. This is our ordinary thinking. It's real, it's genuine, it's true, it's solid, it's me, it's, you know, it's something like this. Or if we don't find that kind of endurance, that kind of solidity, permanence, then it must be nothing. And now we're caught up in a kind of thinking that will involve, or could involve very easily, dismissal. We can get rid of this, we can, you know, and that's precisely where we are. But if in fact we see that we don't actually have any kind of solidity from the start, what we have are these icicles forming in fire. Now it's a completely different attitude and a different approach. Even were we to go to the flip side, and rather than be dismissive of this or that, we now want to help and assist the bleeding hand or the other or whatever. We still, you know, with a compassionate heart, we're still taking it in a kind of mind that allows dismissal, but it's also, it's a very kind of a, I don't know, a goody-goody, saccharine kind of a compassionate heart. You know, there's still a lot of confusion there. Where we really think that there is something there to be preserved and something there to be saved, and oh, I want to do this for that. And of course, the eye is in the picture too. All of this is happening. Once again, this is a confusion. I mean, you won't find actual compassion there. What you find is kind of a sugary compassion, but it's not actual compassion. The reason it isn't actual compassion is because there's no wisdom in it. There's no actual understanding of what the situation is. It's just kind of a patching over. and all kinds of things can happen at that point. Maybe you don't succeed in the compassionate thing you're trying to do, and now you can become frustrated. Or maybe you get burned out on it, you get tired. You know, now you can go, I've done enough, I did that for years, and what good does it do? You know, all of this kind of thinking is caught up in that. You know, what I'm talking about is a belief in solidity, where we believe that you actually have the icicle as we think of an icicle, that there's really an icicle there. Now we'll have an attitude of, oh, I want to preserve that, or, you know, what do I care about that one? You see? It's only when we see the icicle forming in fire that kind of dualistic thinking is gone. To save all sentient beings, the vow of the Bodhisattva isn't coming out of an idea that, oh, I must do some good here. Oh, I must save all of those out there. No, because the understanding of a Bodhisattva is that there aren't any others. And this is to save all sentient beings. It's not to go out there with the idea that I'm going to do some good for them out there. No, that actually is a kind of a dismissive attitude. It is linked to it. It is inseparable from that. So, you know, what I'm saying here, then, when we see it in this way, when we see the forms that are appearing and dying away in each moment, now we can have a compassionate heart. There's your wisdom, is to see it in that way. That's with wisdom. And it's called wisdom because this is actually how it is. We can point to it in all sorts of ways, as I tried to do this morning. There are many other ways we can point to this, in all sorts of ways. But when we see it correctly, not as an idea, but we understand deeply through and through that this actually is reality. It is like that. Nothing there to grasp, you know. Now, compassion, if we look carefully at the heart and mind that understands and sees in this way, compassion is there to take care of the form, the bleeding hand, or whatever it is. Not with the idea of making things better, or this would be good if I did this. Not with any idea like that at all, but just to take care of it, because it is there. And when I say take care of it, I don't know how to take care of it. I don't know precisely what this means, because it's always case by case. But as it comes up to you in this moment, If we see it in the fluidity that it is, we can take care of it, and we will be taking care of it. But when we see it in the form of solidity, we're going to botch it, because generally we're either going to go toward, I've got to do something to protect this. Yeah. It's manipulative. It's intentional. It's a lot of difficulty there. Or we can easily go to the other side and we don't want this, get rid of it, or just forget about it. Who cares? You see what I'm saying, David? So this is a very, very subtle point, and it's something that we need to just sit with, contemplate. You know, just look at that quietly. And at some point we'll realize that it is in the... See, this is also what the Buddha spoke of in terms of eternalism and nihilism. We'll continuously rock between these two. And what we're talking about, ice forming and fire, is neither of these extremes. For those who see with right wisdom, the ceasing of the world as it has come to be, the notion of existence doesn't occur. For those who see with right wisdom, the arising of the world as it has come to be, the notion of non-existence doesn't occur. It's neither existing nor non-existing. This is what we actually have. This, you know, and to see in this way, there's your compassion is right there with that seeing. This is also why compassion and wisdom, that you cannot have compassion without actual true wisdom. What appears to be, what we call compassion, isn't really compassion. It actually causes injury. And if we have wisdom, you can't have wisdom without compassion being there. Beyond that, it's just conventional kind of thinking, calculation. And it could even be pernicious in the guise of compassion. But it's not real compassion, it's not real wisdom. They have to be of equal weight there. Yeah, Mary?
I don't want people to get the idea that you were saying that what Bernie Glassman was saying was confused compassion or mismatch.
Oh, no.
Good-gooding.
Oh, no,
I don't want people to get the idea that that's what you were saying, because I think he was pointing to solidified ideas of compassion and what it means to act out of those solidified ideas.
Yeah, right. I wasn't saying at all that Bernie had it wrong. Well, let me tell you, because this is what he said. He talked about not knowing and, you know, coming into a situation not with a lot of preformed ideas. And that's precisely what I'm talking about here. It's the same thing. So, no, he understands that point. And if you do walk into a situation and there's a bleeding hand there, you of course, take care of it. But we don't need to panic or, oh, my gosh. Just take care of it. Just take care of it. Now, the situation that Bernie Glassman also is aware of, and that we should all be aware of, is that where's the bleeding hand? Well, it's always right here. Always here. There's suffering and confusion immediately at hand, all the time. We're never removed from that situation. So always step into the world and take care of it. But watch that intention. Your intention, because if you're seeing a solidified form and, you know, and you're reacting to that, that's not going to be all that helpful. But it doesn't mean not to act. You know, you have to act, and you will be acting. Even if you choose not to act, you're still acting. But of course, that's intention again. If you were awake, you would realize that you are acting, and you'll be fully engaged in that action. And it's possible, sure, to seek out certain unfortunate, you know, go to the black hole of Calcutta or wherever. That's possible. You can do that. You're a physician. Join physicians. Was it Physicians Without Walls? Doctors Without Borders, right? Yeah, well, anyway, I hope I didn't give you the impression that, because I think Bernie did understand this point. So just be careful to watch the framing in your mind. It becomes very solid very easily. And how do you recognize that? Well, look at the leaning of your mind now. It's attaching to it, or it's showing aversion in some way. That's the clue. And remind yourself that now, somewhere in this picture, then, is a confusion there. There's delusion there. There's mistaking something. There's seeing something as being more solid and real than we actually find. Or at least in a way that doesn't really match actual reality. So this is the thing we need to be doing. This is what Zen practice is about, is learning to recognize, you know this and what is taking place within our mind. Did you have a question?
This may be a comment, maybe you can comment on it. It's always been interesting to me to, regarding icicle formation, one of the biggest icicle formations occurs in adolescence and ongoing in humans. And it actually is linked to, and kind of taught this way, linked to success in its own identity formation.
Yeah.
And in this context, it seems like you could think identity formation as a real negative, but in that context, the psychological process is a real positive. So it's just interesting to think about the differences and the balance.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say it's in the context that I'm speaking of that it's negative. It's neither negative nor positive. It's delusional, but that's not. Well, no, just a minute. No, delusion is not negative. It's not positive either, and it isn't like enlightenment's on the side of good and delusion's on the side of bad. Enlightenment is simply to understand that we don't have enlightenment without delusion, that we don't have the transcendence of identity without identity, etc. It's just an understanding, a realization of that. But it doesn't mean that the illusion has to be gotten rid of, that the delusion, the being caught up in it, has to be gotten rid of, or that as bad or something of that sort. It doesn't mean this at all. So this is an important point. And as for identity, of course, yes, I think we need to just let this form quite naturally, and then see beyond it. Some of you might know Warren Lang. His wife, Marion, I remember once many years ago when I was teaching the in Menominee, the class on the Four Noble Truths. And, you know, the first noble truth is, you know, that human life is characterized by suffering. And afterward, you know, she came up to me and she said, Steve, she said, I've discovered the first ignoble truth. You know, ignoble truth, right? And she said, you have to be asleep before you can wake up. But it's true. It's really true. So if we're thinking delusion is good, enlightenment is good, then we're going to be thinking delusion is bad. It's dualistic. The enlightened don't think in those terms at all. It isn't that one is good and the other is bad. Now you may think, well, then why would I want to awaken then? Yeah, I would say get rid of your idea and go ahead and practice. Go ahead and just step into this moment, see if you can be here. That idea of the good and bad, the dualism there is, once again, holding to the icicle, wanting to preserve it, not realizing that the icicle forms and dies away in each moment. Yeah, Tom.
Why does Buddha, what is reality, an icicle and fire? The actual reality, the icicle and fire can't be grasped. It's not an idea. It's not a constructed. It is, and it's one of those things that you cannot grasp. I mean, if you really look at the statement, icicle and fire, you know, ice is cold, you know, fire is hot. So it's, the idea is not graspable. We can grasp an idea, but the reality of it is not graspable.
Reality
cannot be grasped.
The reality of icicles forming in fire is not graspable, right?
Right.
Yeah. Nevertheless, we can see that. And that's what enlightenment is. That's what awakening is. We realize that that's what's going on. Oh, this is emptiness. Before that, of course, when we hear talk of emptiness, we might think that we were talking about nothingness earlier. We might think that it is nothing. And of course, it is not nothing. All of these things that are forming in the mind, and I don't mean just ideas, but even things like this microphone or the cat, you know? And that's why we get confused when we look as physicists have, you look at that very carefully and you realize, this doesn't seem possible. You know, how can we have a live, dead cat? And of course you can't. You know, they don't realize that live, dead is the nature of reality, but they think cat is the nature of reality. So now you're confused. You see, and cat isn't the nature of reality. Cat is the nature of icicle forming in fire. So what we're talking about, realizing that these icicles form in fire. They're coming and going in fire. Then the coming and going is the fire. And that's the reality. And that can be seen. And of course, and what you're saying is that's not an idea. You're quite right. Yeah. Yeah. So seeing, and that's the problem too, that when we approach, we want to have enlightenment as though it were an idea, as though somehow we get the right idea about reality. But you can't have the right idea about reality because that's just another idea. But that isn't to say that we can't see reality. We can, and in fact, we do. It's impossible not to see reality. We all do, all the time. But we keep holding to the icicles that are forming. And we keep trying to find the right icicle that will explain all of this. You know, so I have the right idea about reality. This is what we're doing, yeah. But we can come to the point where we realize that this is what we're doing and we don't have to grasp. You know? This is also not to have, what we talk about as no idea or no understanding or something like that, but it doesn't mean, we do know. And also don't think that this knowing is something waiting for you in the future. You already have it. But you're probably just not paying enough attention. Noticing the grasping that is taking place within your mind. But at some point, if we continue to turn our attention to this, we will notice that we're doing this. And we'll realize that the thing we're grasping for isn't real. And all the while, here we are, immersed in reality. Well, sort of, not exactly. It's another delusional thought. But, well, it's probably gone on long enough here. And besides, I don't know if I'm going to wait around for the next lawnmower or whatever. or airplane, yeah. We just happen to have an abnormal influx of lawnmowers this morning. I kind of drew it to my attention. But you can cut the tape now, I think.